When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Steve Sybil, Oscar on three. When people ask you what it's like to work for, what immediately comes to mind?
A family. It's like working with family. It's like working with your brother. It's like working with, now it's your brother that, he runs the show now. It's not my brother, it's not the brother that I'm going to, you know, take out in the backyard or whatever. But like, this is a family for us. This is, and that's not a cliche. It's not like, you know, fake or whatever. It's not some rah-rah statement. We're really family. Like, I mean, I was in Adam Michael's wedding. Like, we've been to each other's weddings. We've been to, you know, we've hung out with each other socially. We've been to each other's relatives' funerals. You know, when you've been to somebody's funeral, it's, or you've been to funerals together. You know, we just lost a former player this past week, and a bunch of guys from here went, and like, but there's a camaraderie there. So it really honestly is like family.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, the Husker Fan Sports Show.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast. I'm your host, David Gaspers, and I'm with Honky.
We are now at almost 23,000 followers in Redcast Nation. We have surpassed North Platte to become the 11th largest city in Nebraska. We are Next up is Columbus.
That's it.
We're past North Platte. Columbus is next, and we'll be in the top 10. So, Redcast Nation, we're growing.
Maybe we all need to move back, Honky, just to make sure that we stay ahead of our... No, wait a second. I'm also with Mac.
What's up, Redcast Nation? Excited to be on the show tonight. Even though it's freezing outside, the temperature of Husker football is gradually rising, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
All right. With Redcast Rob...
I am actively encouraging every single high school basketball player in the state of Nebraska to go out and volunteer for the Nebraska Special Olympics. I would love to see the Nebraska Sports Athletic Association suspend everybody all at once, because that would really show them, guys, and really teach kids some good moral, you know, fiber and you know, just.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Rob, yeah, I hear you. Also with Boomer.
Well, glad to be back, and whether we're rebooting, resetting, reloading, starting from scratch, this podcast is going to win the offseason. So.
Whoa, 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 Boomer.
Well, we do have five screens here, Honky. It's exciting to have another native Columbus person here. What do you say, a native Columbusite?
Columbian?
Columbia, I figured.
Yeah, we're Colombian cartel members.
And the Knights of Columbia.
Why don't you introduce Stephen M. Sipple?
Well, we even have a video for it.
Today, we have a smooth conversation with a cool cat.
So find a mixologist to pour you something full of chemistry, because it's time to take a hip sip with Stephen Sipple.
So, Sip, welcome back to the Redcast, man.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. It's great to be. It is really great to be with you. It's a perfect timing. It seems like it's slowed down a little bit. I got a little time here, so let's do it. I'm always interested to hear what you guys think. It's scary to be on with you guys because you typically know more than I do.
I just want to hear that intro. It's so classic, man.
Yeah, I was worried. I got a scowl on my face. Do I always have a scowl?
I was worried when Boomer had his hot take that it was going to like trigger you, because I listen to your show right every day and go back and listen to the pod after you're done. And so I heard you and Jake's discussion over that whole scenario. So, you know,
I like the discussion.
I was keeping an eye on you. That's all. You know?
It's a really, hey, that is a really, I mean, that is a, it's a, it's, I don't know. I toss around the word fascinate a little too much, but I'm fascinated by that discussion that Boomer brought up.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're going to get to that discussion here and others. And what we want is that all the Redcasters that are watching along live, this is kind of the benefit of being here live, ask some questions, because we have a few at the beginning here that we're going to go through, some quick sips as we're calling them. But once we get through those, the rest of it really is going to be mailbag stuff coming in. So we want to hear from you. This is your chance for comments, questions. And I know Boomer and I think Rob, you guys are going to be kind of manning some of that and looking at the back end of the show here. So, but let's get to it. Let's get to some quick sips. And the first one here is, will we see a lot of players enter the portal after the spring game, Sip? Right now, just to give a little bit of information here, this is as of today, 1,564 scholarship players entered the portal since August 1st. 57 of them have withdrawn, one of those being Jamari Butler from Nebraska. 1,014 have committed, signed with new schools, and 493 remain in the portal. So, you know, as of right now, Nebraska is actually doing quite well in this. Bill Connolly posted other P5 teams are shaping up pretty well in returning to production. Nebraska is one of them. We have over 100 scholarship guys right now on the team. So what that leads, Sip, is to spring ball coming up in a couple of months. And we don't think that there's a way that we're going to be keeping 100-plus guys on scholarship. So what do you envision happening at the end of the semester when spring ball gets done?
Yeah, it's not as simple as saying a bunch of guys are going to transfer. It's probably a pretty involved discussion. Some guys will be put on medical, right? You don't want to put too many guys on medical. I mean, you got to pay for all that. Some guys will matriculate on their own. And some guys you can take care of with name, image, and likeness deals. So that part of the equation has sort of, I don't know. There's a lot of angst right now because Nebraska, what'd you say? Nebraska's a little 103 or 104 scholarships right now, and they got to be at 85. I haven't seen it like this. I got to tell you, it's interesting. Some people will say, yeah, they're flipping the roster. I don't look at it like that. They're not. You got 10 returning starters on defense, or 11 if you count Javon Wright, who started one game. You know, you got all those six, you got six or seven returning offensive linemen, a returning starting quarterback, a returning starting running back. You're not flipping those guys. Mm-hmm. Those guys ain't going anywhere. So, yeah, there'll be definitely some guys that go in. Would it be a mass exodus? I don't envision that. But they're going to have to – you got to get to 85 somehow. So it's going to be very interesting.
Sip, can you give a little – Dave. But can you give a little bit of insight? How does NIL work with this? I've heard people say NIL can take over. But, I mean, so if 20 guys go on NIL, is it conceivable you could have 85 scholarships and 20 NIL guys? Or – What does that mean when someone says
a lot of money?
Yeah,
it's conceivable. It's conceivable, but it's not likely. I mean, they've already done it with certain guys, not a lot, but a few, that they've given them NIL packages that are basically commensurate with what a scholarship would be. And you can take care of some guys that way. You're not going to take care of 20 like that, but you can take care of a four or five like that. They've done it. They've done that already. There's walk-ons that they've given NIL money that's almost or equal to a scholarship.
So, follow-up question to that, because I mean, other schools, you know, I remember when NIL launched, BYU had one big sponsor. He runs an athletic, mm-hmm. I don't know, fitness, something like that. And he gave essentially the equivalent of scholarships to all the walk-ons for that mm-hmm. 1 year. I don't know if he's continued to do that, right? So there's an example. But my clarifying question, I guess, is there after that, I mean, if your scholarship and room and board is taken care of through an NIL deal, is there any difference on how the program has to treat walk-on opposed to scholarship? I mean, like, is the training table and everything exactly the same? You would never know.
That's a good question on the training table, but I don't think there's any big difference. No discernible difference. In fact, they wouldn't want it that way. It's a good question. The training table is the only that you kind of got me on the training table. I'm not positive about that, but I'll double check that, but I think everybody's treated the same. Walk-ons are second-class citizens. You know?
Right, yeah.
I kind of remember on one of the tours with Tyler Kai, our friend over there, I think I remember him saying that some students have different types of meal plans in there too. So not I guess, Dave, maybe that is the same thing where like maybe they have access to like one or two meals a day instead of three full or whatever, you know, like, and they split it up that way. I'm not sure. I think they can buy more meals if they want to. So yeah.
Only reason I asked the question is I'd be the only where I could see where some player would be like, no, I don't want to have an NIL equivalent scholarship because I'm missing out on this or that. Right.
Yeah, I do not think that's a factor, David.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it used to be you get room and board back in the day and you still do in certain cases, but some NIL people are just getting their room or they're eating, they're getting the extra money, so they're paying for their food too. Actually, I thought an interesting thing with the food was in Tunnel Talk last week, Husker Online Tunnel Talk talked about last season's one of the issues that some of the players were running into is they didn't like the food. And that was something that Coach Rule, that was like an early win, him meeting with the team and actually kind of making some changes there, but also requiring players in the process of to eat at the stadium because they would take their food to go and not always eat it. Now that's not an option. So I thought that from a Tunnel Talk, I thought that was a pretty interesting
perspective there on the food. I was startled to hear that. I always thought the training table was quality food. Maybe some guys didn't like it. It's interesting, but that is an early win for Rule.
This is a good one here from Johnny GBR, who's former walk-on. When I walked on back, can you put that back up there, please, Boomer? When I walked on back in 2001, I had to pay to eat at the training table. Not sure if that's still the case, though. And, that's 20 years ago. Yeah. But, yeah, sure. So this goes back to supplement.
That could be paid. Yeah,
for sure. Good. Thanks for Johnny, though. Thanks for weighing in.
That was a Can I ask a question about scholarships, too? Because, like, so – when you say that somebody's on scholarship, does that mean full ride, or is that like could that also be partial? Because
football's only for full.
I only ask because of this because there was problems here locally at UNC last year and the year before with like because they were doing partial scholarships for players and pulling scholarship.
That's McCaffrey.
Yeah, so, that's just a McCaffrey thing. Yeah. So so that's why I was asking. So, okay, that answers my question.
Along the lines here, you had a couple of good pieces here, and I wanted to highlight them, Sip, that you've written the last couple of weeks. One of them here, you were talking about the coach clearly having the priorities right. Says, Rule already has made a few comments, in my opinion, that add to the notion that Trev Alberts made a good head coaching hire. Just a notion, we'll see in time. But that the coaching staff is youthful in nature, adding there's not going to be any celebrity coaches. There's not going to be guys with different agendas. We're going to have one purpose, there's a vision, the brand of football we play for, they all believe in. And on top of that, you really appreciate what he said next, that everyone spends too much time thinking about recruiting. They don't think enough about the guys on their own team, but those guys on our team, that's our job. Perfect answer. And I think that applies to what we're talking about here with the roster, is that none of us today, we don't know what that roster is going to look like after spring ball. But I love the fact that we're at 100 plus right now. I love the fact that we didn't push guys out before the spring even starts, which there are other new coaches, somebody to the west of us that came in and kind of told guys right away, get in the portal if you don't want to be here. I like the fact that, you know, if you're treating the players right, I'd rather have them go through the process, go through mat drills this week, go through the offseason, go through spring ball. And then afterwards, now you get evaluated and there's going to be some guys that naturally leave and attrition then. But I like how they're treating the guys so far.
Well, you said something critical, Matt. This week they do start work with the coaches, and it'll be hard. They will try to weed some kids out and do it the right way. That's the right way to do it. I've heard that the early days of Matt Rule and the way he approaches it are rough. And that's pretty standard fare in Division I college football. But they'll turn it up now. There'll be some guys who won't make it through it. I mean, so that'll take care of a few, probably, is my guess. This is a guess, but I've already heard that it'll be rugged. They'll turn it way up. So, as far as the way I mean, Rule has struck a lot. I mean, you know, I know what people see. We do when we do this. People say, "Oh, here we go with the off-season hype and everything." I'm not doing that. It's not that. There's a lot of things that strike the right chord with me. maybe it's old, a lot of old, it's kind of old school stuff, but what he said about, we got to worry about the players on our team. I did feel for years that in this market, we would, the players that were guys who were proven, made plays in big games, et cetera, would almost become afterthoughts during the off season. That sure. Everybody coming in was better just because, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. for no reason at all, except that they hadn't had a chance to fumble yet or throw a pick or miss an open field tackle. They just hadn't had a chance to do it yet. So naturally they were better. Drove me nuts. Still does. So when Rule, said that, I like that. You know, take care of the guys on your own roster. That'll help them recruit guys too, because they know that.
Well, it's that mentality of I need my own guys in here to succeed versus you are my guys the second I come in here. And we've heard that from Barthel with the running backs. We've heard that Cooper with the DBs. You know, it's an open room. Come on in anytime you need to talk to me. You know, you guys are my guys now, whether I recruited you here or not. And I, as a fan, that's what I want to hear.
Oh, yeah. It's really refreshing. We haven't always heard that here, by the way. Not like this. So, yeah.
Oh, I got a quick question, or maybe just a thought. Maybe it just like, you know, I think it was the Busting with the Boys interview was really interesting. There's been a lot of good quotes to your point, and even that intro by Ed Foley talking about how the coaching staff is very familiar with each other. And obviously they've done this kind of twice before with Temple and Baylor. And I think what we've learned over the last month or two is every situation's different, right? And it's easy to look at Baylor and Temple and see that they went 1-11 and 2-10, and all of it must have been exactly the same. And we've learned a lot about those situations that were different. And, you know, the Baylor thing with this, it's interesting. We have 100 scholarship players. And my sense is that the coaching staff is reveling in that, because when they got to Baylor, they had lost so many players. They were down to like 45 scholarship players before they brought in their new, right? And that's like a whole class they lost essentially at Baylor in that transition from Briles to the interim to Rule. So I think, you know, having the luxury of having 100 plus scholarship players and walk-ons that are contributors is something they have to be just absolutely loving here, right? I mean, it's just such a different scenario. And I think in that Busting with the Boys interview, you talked about, you know, does it have to be a slow burn, right? And I mean, let's not drink too much Kool-Aid. I'll give that to Rob. But, you know, I think Rule saying, hey, it doesn't have to be 1-11 or 2-10. Right. Do you feel like it's fair?
Yeah, that's totally fair. And you know what you've heard that from most of these coaches. Now, we haven't heard from all of them, but when you, for instance, today, Terrence Knighton said, I mean, he said the words, we're not far away. He said, you don't know. He said he didn't know what to expect exactly roster wise when he took the job. He didn't know when Rule hired him exactly what he was getting into roster wise. But he says, after looking at the guys we got and seeing the game tape, he said the words, we're not far away. Okay. Rule has said things along those lines. Evan Cooper said things along those lines. Tony White said things along those lines. They like what they got. Now, again, I know this is a hot button topic for some reason. I think a lot of people have agendas, and a lot of it is just and I'm not giving Frost a lot of credit here, but a lot of people, if you say what we're saying, they say, oh, you're just saying that because you're a Frost guy. You know, so there's all these weird agendas. I'm not saying it because of that. I'm saying it because I respect what the guys did. I respect Casey Thompson a lot. I respect what he did last year a lot. I mean, a lot. I respect what the defense did a lot. They played pretty well. Not great, but pretty well under adverse circumstances. And like I said, they got 11 guys back. I mean, they've started games.
I was literally just whispering into Honky's ear that same thing that, you know, all that credit, some of that has to go to Frost, whether people like it or not.
He built a roster that
we're talking about all the retention. And hell, Rule even went out and got Betts to come back. To me, that's crazy talk that he got that guy to come back. One of the best players that Frost recruited from the state got him to come back in. That gives some credence to what Frost was doing. I know there's plenty of problems and you can say whatever you want about Frost. The win-loss record alone was enough to fire him, and I'm just going to leave it at that. Yeah. But to me, there's no question what Rule's inheriting versus what Frost is inheriting is an entirely different program. And if we do have a quick turnaround, like a really quick turnaround and have a winning season and go to a bowl game, some of that credit goes to Frost. Some of it goes to Mickey. Some of it goes to Bill Bush too, I think. But
yes, and the rest of the staff, really. I mean,
yeah. And I love that Rule has never gone out of his way to bus toss anybody. I know when Frost got here, we were all bus tossing Riley, and everybody wanted to hear that because we hated what our record was. But it is kind of refreshing at this point in the game for him to give credit to what Frost had done while building on it and moving it forward. So to me, like all the other fluff, you know, this team's working harder than they ever did. This coaching staff's out there recruiting harder. Like, I remember when Frost was jumping on planes, going back and forth across the country, recruiting Adrian, coaching a bowl game and all this other stuff. And everybody was all fine and high-fiving each other about that. Right. So, I mean, it's like throwing the baby out with the bathwater kind of thing. You know, it's like there was some good that was done, even though everybody hates hearing it.
Oh, yeah, they do. I mean, it's interesting, though. I mean, I don't look at it. Well, I don't know. You got to remind people what happened at the end of the Riley tenure that last year. I mean, it didn't look like that this year.
No,
it didn't look anything like it did. I mean, what were you covering in Riley's last year? I mean, it was a debacle. It was blowout after blowout. Yeah. Team wasn't in it. Team quit. I mean, largely quit. People will say, well, that's because Sip. Come on. I mean, they quit because Eichhorst got fired during the year, and they knew. So then what happens? People come up with all these great excuses for quitting. I mean, it's amazing. It's like there's an excuse, but that, you know, that's what we do. But you know, you could say, well, these kids, their head coach got fired, and then their defensive coordinator got fired. They had reason to quit, and you know what? They didn't. They didn't quit. They kept fighting, and I respect that. I'm not necessarily saying I respect Frost, but I do respect the players. And we're not talking, I always say kids, they're not all kids. Casey's my age. I mean, they're not all kids here now. That's not what you're talking about anymore. There's 23, 24 year old guys over there.
And a lot of them are making way more money than any of us.
And you know, look, I respect what Rule has done to not lose all these kids. Because I'll tell you something that I know we would have said, and a lot of people were saying this back in October and November, is, gosh, I hope Mickey, obviously before everything happened, I hope Mickey and I hope Bush stick around at least. Because if we don't, you know, we're starting over. We're losing all these guys. And it's a true credit to Coach Foley and the guys that came on there and talked to you today, and Coach Rule and everything, that those guys didn't leave. And namely, I guess, to kind of end this first quick sip, you know, we did a poll about a month or a few weeks back. You know, when Coach Frost was hired at NU, he said he wanted 5 scholarship quarterbacks. What do you think the right number is? 3, 4, 5, or basically other, let us know. We have over 1,800 votes here. 4 is the number that everyone said. And the reality is right now, because nobody has quit, we still have 6 guys on scholarship. Now, do we think that there's going to be 6 at the end of the semester? Probably not. Probably guys are going to start to move around, whether that's leave or switch
positions. Somebody's got to be a fullback.
Switch positions, something, right? But I think it's just it's a credit to Rule that he's kept the guys here. Now start doing mat drills, start doing off-season stuff, get to spring ball practice, and we'll go from there.
What's a mat drill?
Mat drill.
Is that like named after Matt Rule?
No,
is
M-A- that like a thing? No, M-A-T drill.
Okay. Yeah, do they wrestle? What happens?
I mean, every staff does something a little different. You'll see all the videos.
I hear people throwing that term around like we all know what it means, and I don't know what that means.
It's a little bit of everything.
Is that like the circuit or the metabolic circuit?
Guys running around pulling things, teamwork stuff.
We don't need that again.
Hammers on tires.
I don't know. Rhabdo last time. If anybody gets Rhabdo this time, I'm out.
Yeah, we get stuff. There are enough garbage buckets out there to puke in.
Stuff you do at 5 a.m. in February.
Yeah.
Well, the second quip sip, I guess, since we're talking quarterback there, how about the next one is, will Dylan Raiola choose the Huskers? Figure it's a nice easy one sip, you know, just to tell us, what do you know, yes or no, is he going to become here the next top 5-star?
We won't make a clip out of it or anything, so don't worry about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, go ahead and make a clip.
This is just between you and us.
I don't want to talk about it at all. I like the subject because it's a legit subject. I mean, it's a genuine discussion. And it's a genuinely interesting discussion. Nebraska's in it. There's no doubt about it. I don't say it lightly, and I don't say it without – you know, I talk to Dominic all the time. I mean, it's not – I don't – and you understand, Dominic played – know, his last year at Nebraska was 2001, and we stayed in touch. So I've talked to him a lot over the years. We talk a lot now, and that's why I feel like I speak with a degree of credibility on it, because we've discussed it at length. Yeah, they're right in it. Nebraska's right in it. I'd say my perception is it's Georgia and Nebraska. You know, that's I'd say Georgia number one, Nebraska number two. Looks like USC or USC probably three. Oregon's in it right now. Not much else. I wouldn't say there's anybody in it besides those four. Dom did say someone could emerge, so you watch that. TCU has gotten mentioned. I don't see that. So yeah, I mean, Nebraska's legitimately in it. They're doing a great job so far, the new staff, of making Dylan a priority and making him and doing it the right way. Mm-hmm. Dom loves football. He's I know it's kind of a no duh, but not all those guys love football. I mean, there's guys that play that don't love it. Dominic loves it and loves talking about it and really has enjoyed talking football with Satterfield and Rule. So they've done a very good job, Nebraska, to this point of establishing themselves in this. And so, it's a great conversation. He's the number one player in the country. He's a game changer. Yes. They haven't screwed it up.
Is there an expected timetable for him to announce?
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. I mean, I think it would be March or April.
So it's not a matter of him wanting to see what the team looks like necessarily.
That's a good question. That's a really good question. In a sense, I think they do. I think they want to continue. I mean, they have a pretty good in that regard, right?
Well, I mean, a commitment's just a pledge until they sign, though, right? Too. I mean,
that's
I
guess true. That's scary. That's a scary part of it. This isn't conjecture because Dominic has said it on the record, as has Dylan, that one of the things they're looking at is a place that has a chance to win, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sure.
They're very interested in personal growth. They're very interested in – they're really interested in him getting better as a player. That they want to go to a place where they feel very comfortable that Dylan is going to get better and better, right? So all that is the discussion. And they want him to be at a place where they feel like he's getting better as a person too. That's always big. Dom always talks about that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an involved discussion. The thing that I would tell you that would concern me, and this is just my read on the whole thing from talking to Dominic, is that Kirby Smart is the guy leading the charge for Georgia. It's the man himself. And Kirby's a great recruiter. He's a good BSer. He's loquacious. He's one of the best recruiters in the world. So that's what you're dealing with. He's got the best program in the country. So Kirby is very persuasive.
Those go hand in hand, hey, Sip?
What's that?
Those go hand in hand, being a really good recruiter and having the best program in the country.
They tend to.
Is Coach Rule loquacious? I don't know.
I think he is. I'll tell you what.
I think that means flexible.
Excellent use of the word, Honky. Excellent use of the word.
Yeah, just look it up. I think I got it right. No,
you keep using that word.
Rule is a talker, and he's very good. He's very pleasant. He's not – he doesn't try to be slick. In fact, he said, I don't really have a pitch. I just tell him, here's what we have to offer, which is sort of a pitch. But he just tells the guys, this is what we can do. And I don't know. I hope I'm right. It's just a gut feel. You don't know, but I think they got something in Rule.
I just wanted to jump in really quick. Sip, Rob mentioned your show early break, and I listened to it quite often too. In this last week or two, you've had Bill Bush on as your co-host, which it's just been fabulous. And I was listening today, and he was talking about recruiting and Coach O, and he probably has some of those same characteristics, right? I mean, it was intriguing to hear him talk about how what the impact of sending almost the entire coaching staff out to Phoenix to talk to Dylan was. I mean, that's what's been like just having Bill in the studio and some of that insight he's been giving you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's fascinating. Thinks of things. I mean, I always say football's really involved, and that really occurs to me every day when I listen to him. It's really involved. The whole thing about Ed Orgeron is interesting to me because he's kind of almost seems like a caricature of himself sometimes. But there's a lot of depth. And what Bill tells you about Ed O's recruiting, I think Rule's a lot like it. Like you heard today, Bill talk about they had those power hours. So at 5 o'clock, Ed Orgeron would get all the staff together for an hour, and those staff members would have to get the top guy they're recruiting on the phone and get FaceTime, put him on FaceTime. Ed Orgeron didn't want to talk to him on the phone. He wanted to talk to him on FaceTime. And you know what? You better had your guy. You better have your guy. If you didn't have it, it was a bad day. Mm-hmm. Now, Rule does power hours. I mean, they have power hours. So I don't know. Listening to Bill, what you get is, well, you know what Bill always said? I mean, what he's always said to me, even back when he was at LSU, was simple. At LSU, it's 4th and 1 every day. It's 4th and 1 every single day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now, I wouldn't say when he got to Nebraska, it was 4th and 1 every day. All right. But at LSU, it was 4th and 1 every day. Mm-hmm. So that's what, you know, they want. That's how you win a national championship. So,
without talking out of turn, Stip, did he mm-hmm. give any indication to you that when he got here, he was a little surprised at the structure of things? I don't know how to phrase that properly.
I think you asked it just fine there.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that's a good question. I don't think he was surprised by that. He was surprised when he got here. You know, he was an analyst.
Yeah, he didn't have to do much, he said.
And he did say on the air that he was surprised how little he was used.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a positive guy.
Given his resume, he was surprised that he wasn't allowed to do much. So there was that.
So, well, to close out a little bit of the Raiola talk, two things, I guess, with this. One of them is, I've got this tweet for me here, and it's what mm-hmm. he was talking about with, I call it a sleeping giant because it is a giant. It's one of the giant programs in college football. You can say it's just another program, but it ain't. In this house, it's not just another program. I guess specific to Raiola, how big of a role do you think dad can be in this?
Well, I don't ever have trouble answering that question because mm-hmm. all you got to do is say they're a tight family, and they are. They are a tight-knit, real tight-knit family, real tight-knit. So naturally, dad's, long before Dylan became the number one player in the country, I'm sure it was very clear to Dylan that his dad had a strong affinity for his alma mater, real strong. Now, again, everybody's a little different that way. We all have some affinity for it, but you know guys that have a stronger affinity than others.
Right.
Dom's on a very high end of that. He loved it. Mm-hmm. Impressed that profound impact on him. Loves coming back. Loves the whole thing. Wants it to be good. Dominic has a very strong desire. He's been saying this sleeping giant stuff for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He says we haven't been having these conversations for years. But he wants it badly to turn. And, you know, come on. I mean, think about it. What if his son and his uncle played major roles in that turn? I mean, how do you mm-hmm. think Dominic would feel? It would be incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know he's entertained that.
Oh, he's played a big role.
You know, like that's like when we think about winning the lottery. Dominic's thought about his son going to Nebraska and bringing us back.
Ben Scott come here and everything from Hawaii.
He was instrumental. Dominic was instrumental in that.
And my understanding, Sip, he was mm-hmm. frustrated last year, the first go-around, when Dylan went through the recruiting process a year ago with Nebraska. Has he talked at all the difference, I guess, to reflect on this new staff? Has he talked about the difference of time two versus time one of Nebraska going after him?
No, he hasn't talked about it directly, but we talked about how the head coach, the former head coach, handled it last year, I'd say it wasn't great. And this year, he talks a lot differently about it. It's like, it's like, okay, this is what we wanted. This is what we kind of expected. So that's what I think has set Nebraska on this right course, and it's kind of changed the conversation. Sure. I'm talking about Nebraska now being in the hunt, like squarely in the hunt. I wouldn't have said that a few months ago, before Rule was hired. But yeah, they've quickly made up a lot of ground. It's been impressive.
What was the impetus of him actually decommitting from Ohio State? I mean, what caused him to pull back from that and start open up his recruiting again?
I don't know exactly.
Okay.
I don't know what he has said. You know, I can't remember exactly what he said on the record. I don't think they were obviously weren't entirely comfortable with the way he was being recruited.
Oh.
So.
Well, I know they got that other quarterback and they said they were.
Well, there's all that. I mean, it's hard.
But
I don't know.
For a five star.
Those things can get a little tricky. They can get a little tricky.
Mm-hmm. Well, the third quick sip, and then it's going to be on to the questions from the mailbag here. We're going to switch a little bit of sports here. Does Trev have a tough decision to make after the Nebraska ball season is done?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. It gives me a headache, kind of. It does. You know, I've written, and I feel like it's fair to cut Fred slack in the wake of those injuries to Ben Dymel and Juwan Gary. You got to cut him slack. It's only fair. But so they've played two games now without those guys, without both of them. Lost to Northwestern at home. You know, Northwestern really was too comfortable offensively in that game. I was amazed by it. They scored on over 50% of their possessions. Northwestern
54.
Yeah, that's high. They got in a big rhythm. Came in and once again and buried Nebraska on its home floor fairly easily. Nebraska made a little run at the end. And then Maryland, I mean, game got away from Nebraska. I would have expected more in those two games. So there's this tightrope you walk, I think. If you were in this mindset of evaluating Fred, there's this tightrope you walk. You got to cut him slack, but how much slack? You know, how much slack are we cutting him? He's 12-58 in the Big Ten. It's some 12-58. I mean, it's so, you know, that record's got to matter. You can't ignore it. So yeah, I would say, and you got to watch crowd numbers at PBA. You got to watch those home game crowds. Yeah, I do think there'll be a tough decision. Maybe Fred will do really well and it won't be a tough decision. You bring him back, or maybe he'll just spin out of control and it'll be an easy decision. I don't know. But I just think that the record I watch is that Big Ten record. And I feel bad talking about it because I know it's got to kill Fred. It's got to kill him. I mean, this losing, you can kind of tell. I hope it's not zapping him too much. That would be a concern of mine if I were a Nebraska fan, that the head coach is affected, because that's a lot of losing. That's a lot of getting hit on over the head.
You know, Sip, we tweeted this out yesterday, and I think it's a lot along the lines of what you just said regarding Coach Hoiberg. And we haven't made a lot of statements, you know, on our Twitter or anything, but we said multiple things can be true at once. We appreciate the changes that they've made this year, and definitely we appreciate the team effort. The injuries have no doubt played a huge factor. And number three, results can matter, and we're 34-78 in 4 years. I also said we don't have consensus within the Redcast here on what to do. There's solid arguments on both sides. And we got quite a few responses on Twitter from this. People going in both directions, you know, yes, we need to move on. No, we need to keep them. The two times I would respond to somebody pretty vehemently would be if somebody said, well, who cares? It's Nebraska basketball. Nobody cares. I would respond to them. That's a dumb response. Yeah. Number two, we had one person that responded, it's all about the W's and L's. And I would make the argument that it is deeper than that. You use the word nuance a lot, and I think it's a good word for here. I think it goes deeper than just wins and losses. You know, has a coach had enough time? And I think that's part of the argument. Yes, no. Mm-hmm. I also think – I go back to like year four of the knee era. When Danny Nee was here after year four, the same amount of time that Hoiberg had been here, you know, Knee had the success in year one, took them to the NIT Final Four. But after that, the next 3 years, they finished 6th, 6th, and 7th in the Big Eight. They had sub 500 records two of the years. And I think Devaney was within his rights at that point. He could have made a move, but he also could look at to the next season, year five, look at, you know, Rich King and Bo Reed and Clifford Scales coming back, you know, that they had built to that season. And you could see that hope and you could see, okay, year five, I see a reason not to make the change. Don't implode it. That would be my biggest question right now would be, if I'm Trev, is if I'm looking ahead, yeah, we know what the last four seasons have been, but is there a reason in year five for me to think that it's going to get turned around? I don't want to blow this up too early if I feel like year five is going to be better. That would be the question. And me personally, I'm not sure that I look at year five and think great things right now. I think some of the best players we have are going to be guys that are gone, Bandamel and Walker and Griesel.
Yeah, that's me personally. I mean, it's, I agree. I agree with what you're saying. Really, with Fred, it's an interesting discussion in part because I think most people want him to succeed.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I mean, absolutely. 100%.
Now, I think most people do want him to succeed. Do they believe he can succeed? I think that's the distinction you got to make. And that's kind of where I'm at. I do want him to. I like him. Mm-hmm. I thought the hire was good. I was wrong. And I'll tell you how I was wrong. I mean, there was a coach. I thought it was a great hire. I pushed for it. And then I heard from coaches said, no, his system will never work. System won't work in the Big Ten. You should have identified that. I didn't. It didn't. His system didn't work. He changed it completely. And now I like it. I mean, I like the way they play. I like the guys he brought in. Can he whip it? He doesn't have to whip the entire roster around. That's kind of that's an inaccurate narrative. He didn't have to change it. There's guys coming back. But he's going to have to replace some key guys. So it comes down to that. Do you believe he can do it? Can he bring in another batch of guys like Griesel and Juwan Gary and Bandamel? Can he do that? I don't know. That's the question. And that's what you don't know. It's tempting to bet on him, but here's the thing. They keep losing. The wild card in the discussion is how much does it zap Fred? You know, mm-hmm. How much does the losing affect him? Is it affecting him? I don't know. It's got to be to a certain extent.
Well, one thing that I've noticed, I'm one of the ones that kind of is pushing towards the, you know, time to move on side of things, which, you know, isn't very, you know, Kool-Aid of me, but one of the things that seems really consistent with Hoiberg during his tenure has been that he brings in a lot of guys that are known to be great shooters, right? And uh-huh. and known to be, and then they come here and for some reason they're not. I guess that's the easiest way to put it. And you know what? Why do you think that is? Is it coaching? Is it just? I mean, what? It just to me, it just seems uncanny how often.
Well,
it
happens with a lot of these guys. I think I know what you're getting at. The one area that you really look at is a free throw line.
Free throws, yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's been really inexplicable. Three of his 4 years have been, you know, pretty bottom of the barrel. Last year wasn't that bad. They were 71% or in that area. But the other 3 years, it's been bad. It's been really bad this year. Fred shot 85% from the line in the NBA. I don't know why that doesn't translate. He teaches it right, but it's not being absorbed. You know, Fred he knows how to teach shooting, but it's not getting absorbed for whatever reason. As far as those guys, you know, they'll bring back, you know, probably Breidenbach. You'd think they'd bring back Jamarcus Lawrence, Wilcher, Denham Dawson,
Lloyd,
Lloyd. Now Bandamel, his college career is over, but you can bring back Juwan Gary. Mm-hmm. So there's some guys there. So it's not total roster flip again. So the answer to your question is, yeah, I do think there's going to be a tough decision that has to be made.
Is that good enough for year four though, Sip? In the era of NIL and transfer portal and all that. I mean, is that what we have coming back good enough in year four? Year five mm-hmm. to be excited about? Because we got a buddy that's listens to the show, Bella. He's a humongous season ticket holder, humongous basketball fan, and that's his thing. Mm-hmm. Every time it's year four. Some of these things we're talking about, in a small roster where you should be able to flip it fairly quickly with the facilities we have and the money we throw at it. It doesn't, to me, and I'm kind of a casual basketball fan, front runner type.
Everybody's me, a casual just doesn't, basketball fan around here. That's the problem. everybody's casual.
Well, I'd love to get hyped about it, but it's like every time you do, it's not really worth the effort.
Yeah, the thing that bothers me more than anything is what is just how casual it is. It's like I don't know. It's kind of a silly example in a way, but I go to Buffalo Wings and Rings with my grandson all the time, and we went the other night when they were playing Northwestern, and when we were driving, I said, "Ooh, we might be going at a bad time. There'll be a tip off for that game. There might be a bunch of people in there watching it. And we might, you know, it might be kind of packed." Stupid. I mean, why did I think that? There's no
I heard you talk about that on the radio the other
day. And that's a, to me, that's a, you know, it, I don't know. I can make a mountain out of a molehill with the best of it, but that is not good to me. That is not the way it should be. Not that place should be packed. I doubt even East Lansing, it's packed in those places, but I bet there's a fair amount of people that gather and watch Michigan State, Indiana, you know, Michigan, decent teams in the Big Ten. But here it's not even something people think about.
I think part of the problem with that, and this is where I don't put it on the fans anymore, when you've been sub 500 for so long, and really the entire era of Hoiberg, we've been sub 500, it's not that fans don't care. They just – it's just so bad that people just eventually stop.
Beller cares. He drives down from Omaha for all these games. And he's a guy that wanted Miles to maybe get another chance. I mean, if you look at it from, like, let's just take the casual fan out of it. Let's take the hardcore fan and look at the hardcore fan. What has the program done to serve them?
You're right. Yeah, that's an issue. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. Go ahead, Dave.
No, I'm just saying, like, I've been thinking about this a lot because – We've had some arguments amongst ourselves. You know, Rob's like, let's get rid of him. And I'm like, you know, and to your point of like, you know, this has been a restart with Hoiberg for year four. But I mean, does that mean that he should get another year to keep this going or not? You know, it's to your point, Mac and Hockey of like just the program hasn't given the fan base much. You know, I mean, I was thinking about the Miles era, and it's a really interesting era in the sense of like, he would have, if it wasn't for that run of like winning eight or nine in a row in year two and making the tournament, he never would have got to year six. Right. Yeah. I mean, like he just wasn't right. But I mean, because after that year two where he makes the run to the tournament, he has three really horrible years. I mean, even with good talent, they were sub 500, and that sucked the life out of me. I was really excited about Nebraska basketball for year three under Tim Miles. I thought that guy was the ticket. He was like, we're finally going to get us back. I was like, he's going to win a game in the tournament. We could go to the Sweet 16 under 10 Miles. And it just like, when it fell flat in years three through five, it just sucked the life out of this Nebraska basketball fan. I was like, man, really? That didn't work, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's just been so long compared to the knee eras where we just got rolling finally. And it was so fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
But think of that. You just said it, though. That little run kept him on for two more years. We didn't even win anything that year, really.
Yeah.
And that kept him. That's what the fan base is willing to attach to and embrace, and we would rock. PBA would be unbelievable.
It would.
If we had a program that was serviceable day in and day out.
We saw No Sit Sunday and the excitement that could be created there. And that's with, you know, five of the 7 years that Miles is here, we finished 10th, 11th, 12th, 12th, and 13th. Five of the 7 years, you know, and yet still there's people that to this day would say we should never have gotten rid of him either. So it's tough here, but you know what? I love this chalk. Boomer, let's get to the mailbag questions that we have coming in. Sip, I don't know how much time you have, but we're going to keep throwing until you tell us.
That we keep going.
All right, Boomer, what do we got so far for questions?
Okay, I got a few questions here. One kind of briefly touched on, but maybe expand a little from Javon Van Crump Howard. Nice, fancy formal name there. Must be an Ivy Leaguer. When does winter conditioning start, and what does it usually consist of in terms of what the players and coaches can and can't do?
Mat drills.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah, it has started. It'll really pick up this week when the coaches can start working with the kids. But, it started at least a week ago. A week or two ago, I mean, what does it consist of? I'd say a common sense answer is a lot of intense training, weight training, running, everything you can kind of imagine. No on-field work. They can't do that. There can't be a ball involved. So that's about what I know about it.
Yeah, and that's
what the coaches can do, or contacts.
I'm sorry?
Any limits to what the coaches can do, or contacts with players, things like that?
I think there's limits for sure. Like I said, they can't be on the field. There can't be a ball involved. There can't be that sort of structure. I think they can be in there in the weight room. But I'm not even sure about that. So, yeah, I don't want to go too far down. I don't got the NCAA rule book in front of me.
And this is from a timeline standpoint, it's about the next 8 weeks is winter conditioning. And then as we get to, what is it? Is it early March, I think, is when they'll be starting, or maybe even mid to late March, I guess they're starting spring ball. Are they doing something different with spring ball this year, or are they doing the week off in the middle like they have in the past? Do you know?
No, they're going to keep it rolling right up till the spring game.
All the way through.
I don't think there's a week off this year.
Mm-hmm.
They've done that off and on for years, really.
Mm-hmm. So that allows them to kind of, I think it's like about 8 weeks of training that will take you towards the end of March, and then about a full month, and then the spring game is April 22nd
this year.
Earth Day.
It's on a Saturday.
It's on a Saturday.
Is it Earth Day? Really?
It is Earth Day, April 22nd. Yeah.
Well, we posted something about the coaches clinic. Mac, you and I went to the coaches clinic for years.
Yeah.
And I really hope that that's something this year that the high school coaches, you know, we heard Ed Foley today talk about going around the state, and he's been to over 75 schools himself. There's been over 100 schools.
That would be interesting.
It would be great to see the coaching staffs, the high school coaches from across the state, in essence, almost kind of pay them back by showing up 100%. In force. I mean, the first couple of years I went to the coaches clinic under Solich. And at that time, there were 600-700 coaches going. It was one of the biggest ones in the country. And then progressively, coaching staff after coaching staff after coaching staff, they just kind of got smaller and smaller for whatever reason.
I don't get that.
But I would love to see this one be one of those huge ones. I mean, and it should be. Every single staff from the panhandle here, they should be sending their people here.
And it's kind of funny, again, with when the Frost era started. You could see that they were really tightening down on that coaching. It was almost like, don't even try to come if you're even vaguely interested. You better be a coach. You better have your ID. It was a little different than Riley. It was a little different than Bowie.
Sure. Yeah. Boomer, what else we got, man?
Okay, sticking with the spring game talk from loyal viewer Ken. Do you think Coach Rule will be willing to showcase his offense in the spring game, i.e. a fullback trap or two? And kind of expanding on that, what do we know about how Coach Rule runs spring games? What can we expect to see?
Well, the only hint, we got a hint the other night, you heard probably on Trev Howard's show, where he said it will be football this year. So I don't know. I didn't know what he meant by that, except it got pretty – I mean, there wasn't much going on last year. And it really was
an understatement of the year.
Yeah, it was hard to make – I mean, in my shoes, I would almost be kind of depressed on that day because I got to make something out of this. I mean, fans want me to write about it like it's really meaningful, and it is really hard to do.
I've seen more competitive Pro Bowls. I mean, that was terrible.
Honky and I actually had a recent conversation about that, and I was like, I was kind of mad after it because, you know, I only get so many trips out to Nebraska, like, you know, from Colorado. And I was like, I was pretty mad that I really feel like I wasted a trip until, like, some of the stuff that happened after the game for Honky and I, like, you know, going to a party and stuff. But, like, other than that, like, that game was absolutely terrible. But I have looked back. To see kind of in like when Rule was at Temple and when Rule was at Baylor, and there is some video available and it is an actual football game. There was even one at Baylor they did. I can't remember if it was year one or year two, but they actually went to overtime and they played overtime because the teams were tied at the end of regulation. So,
well, think about that. Back to Dave's point, you know, when he took over, you know, Baylor, he had half the roster that he has right now. I highlighted, you know, I'm going to ask this one
because
I do this all the time. Green jerseys on quarterbacks, but we have six scholarship quarterbacks right now. And, you know, my belief on quarterback and green jersey is if you have a competition, you take them off. If the competition's over, if someone's the starter, by all means, wear the green jersey and don't get hit. But are we going to have competitions at positions like that? Can we expect hitting? Can we expect tackling? He likes the Oklahoma drill, Coach Rule said. We've heard about fullbacks. I mean, physicality. We want to win in the trenches. You know, how do you win in the trenches if you're not hitting? Those are the kind of questions.
Yeah. There is some reality that has to enter into the discussion. Are they deep enough at certain positions to do it? I mean, it kind of comes down to that. I think Frost felt like they weren't, and that's on him. But yeah, it comes down to that. Are they deep enough, for instance, up front on the lines of scrimmage to play a real game? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that conversation could evolve this spring a little bit. It can evolve because of injuries during spring practice. Yeah, we'd like it to be like Georgia. It's not Georgia right now. So I don't know what Trev meant by that. I should ask him. I am talking to Rule this week. It'll be a good question for him. What did Trev mean? In fact, I better write that down. What did Trev mean by that the other night when he said it will be real football in the spring game? I don't know.
Can you tell me physical at 15 plus scholarships? You know, if you're never going to feel comfortable, you know, like, we've got like 16 wide receivers and six quarterbacks. Take them on.
112 guys over on scholarship. They should be able to play.
When you talk to Coach Rule, can you ask him his doppelganger Honky wants to know if they're wearing green jerseys? I'd appreciate that.
Just see if you're really a doppelganger. Yeah, you kind of are.
Well, I've got the smock on even.
Yeah,
this is the official smock. So
we're gonna start walking around.
Can we bring up the comparison photos?
Not supposed to be.
Oh man, let's see. Do we have that?
We got the comparison photos.
Let's see.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh wow! See, you look like Kitty brothers.
I don't see it as much as the other
brothers. Well, he's wearing a camo hat and blue.
Yeah, you can say brothers for sure.
Right. For sure.
Yeah.
We're going to cash in on that, brother.
Hey, Boomer. Boomer, what else, man?
Okay, let's see. We've got one from Husker Nut, or maybe it's pronounced Husker Newt, like the band Husker Du. I'm not sure, but kind of touched on this. You know, what are your thoughts on the job Coach Rule and staff, especially Ed Foley, have done recruiting Nebraska so far?
Aggressive. I mean, they've been aggressive. Everybody knows that. And I just like the way they recruit in general. They're very aggressive. God, I mean, it was fascinating to hear Terrence Knighton today say there's a lot of competition on the staff. You don't want to get outworked. There's a lot. I think he fosters a very competitive environment. And people would say, oh, yeah, of course they do. That's what every Division I program does. They don't. And it hasn't been competitive enough here. So I love the sound of it. I just love it. I mean, I wonder, on one hand, there is a concern I have about this staff being so green. No big real, not a lot of Big Ten experience, very, very little at all on the entire staff. That's a concern. But it's sort of balanced out by the level of trust that these guys have in Rule. They're very respectful of their boss. I really trust Rule at a high level. I trust that man. It seems very trustworthy to me. His record suggested. Now, Carolina was a disaster, but he owns that. And he was a disaster. He got booed out of Carolina. It was a bad deal. I know Carolina fans, and they told me, no, Sipple, this is a disaster. He was terrible here. You know what? It didn't work. It's true. It worked, though, at Temple, and it worked at Baylor. That's more meaningful to me. And I like the fact that Rule owns that Carolina experience. And I think it helps him. I think it will help. I think he's pretty hungry. Yeah. So he learned a lot from it. And I just like, you heard about, if you listen to Bussin' with the Boys, I thought that was the best stuff.
That was a great interview.
Yeah. I didn't write that part of it. I actually thought that was the best part, though. The way he addressed what happened in Carolina. Owned it. Thinks he can learn from it. Actually developed good relationship with players through it. I think he's going to be good.
The NFL comparison. Go ahead, Rob.
I was going to say, you just said something and it kind of triggered a thought in my head. And I guess I'll just ask it straight up. Rule played in the Big Ten, right? He played for Penn State. So he has, he played in the Big Ten. He knows what it takes to win and play in this league. How much do you think his coaching staff is going to listen to him when he passes along the advice to his coaches and says, look, this is the, what we're going to need to do?
That's a good question. I do think Rule understands because he's a native Pennsylvanian. I mean, I don't know. He grew up in New York. I think he was born in Pennsylvania, did play at Penn State. I think Rule himself does understand it. I do think he's going to have to impart that wisdom to some of the guys. That's important, by the way. I think that's important. But I think he'll do it. Now, that again, that's the part that I wonder about a little bit, that whole discussion, because there were guys who told me going into to the Frost tenure that that staff's going to struggle, Sipple. Because those guys don't have Big Ten experience, a lot of them, and they're young. A lot of them are young, and they this is an older coach league, and now we're kind of seeing that type of staff again. So I'm a little wary that way, but I'm not, you know, I'm not the guy though to rule out any coach before he coaches a game at a particular school, because the equation changes. So I'm not that guy. I'm not judging these guys right now. And in fact, if I had my druthers, I'd say I don't want to judge him until after year two. I want to see what it looks like after year two.
I think that's it's hard to preach patience to Husker fans, but that's probably the right way to go about it. But you know, it's funny, when Frost came in, it was he fancied himself as an offensive play caller, an offensive genius. You know, he was the guy that was going to transform, and the Big Ten's going to adjust to us. Riley was sort of a CEO type, but he was still kind of an offensive guy, quarterback's coach. He had success with that. Rule comes in, and he's almost, you know, you hear the term player's coach all the time. He's almost a coach's coach. Yeah. And he seems to he develops young coaches to do.
He does.
And maybe that's what we need. Like, Rule is he's very much a CEO in terms of, like, you don't attach a system to Rule. You don't attach a style of football necessarily, like spread or I formation, whatever. It's like, what do we have for players? What do we have for coaches? How can we optimize, maximize everything like that? That might be what we need, but it's certainly different than the last couple coaches we've had. So it's hard to say. And his, I thought some people took offense to this. Some people, I don't know. I've seen the quote be pulled out. But when he was saying, you know, part of me is like, why are you even questioning me on what coaches I'm hiring? You called me. You hired me because you're losing. And I thought, yeah. Exactly. We're losing. What do we know about winning right now? Let's get a guy in here who's done some things, and let's let him run. And to Trev's credit, I think that's exactly what he's going to let him do. And we'll see. But his track record has earned him, I think, a little bit of leeway in terms of who he's going to hire. And we'll see what these guys do. No question they lack Big Ten experience, and that maybe could be to their detriment. We'll see. But I'm not going to get all hot and bothered about it right now.
I'm not either. I think it might be, you know, I think there's things that could balance it out. And one of them is work ethic and youth. It does make sense to me to hire a younger staff for this job. I know Trev was very intent on he's talked a lot about it, about hiring a, he believes it should be a grinder in that chair. Okay. That this job requires a lot of energy. Now, he hired that guy.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
I don't think the staff is reflective of Rule. So that's good. I like that. I think that could balance out our concern, that just sheer work ethic and enthusiasm. These guys are very enthusiastic guys. They're not, you're not 60-year-old guys, you know, they're young guys that want to prove themselves, and they very much respect Rule. People are going to say, Sip, where isn't that the case? I've covered teams where the head coach isn't that respected by some of the guys. And I don't see that with this staff. So it's different. It's a different, it does have a different feel. But I think Trev went out and got a guy that will grind. I mean, that will work all the time. And you know what? I have said it before. I believe this job needs that. It's a different job than a lot.
Yeah.
When they haven't had grinders. Wouldn't say Riley was a grinder. Wouldn't say Bo was a grinder. Wouldn't say Frost was a grinder. Would say Callahan was, and would say Frank was.
Have you had a chance to talk with? I mean, because we're speaking youth here, and it's kind of like been the running joke among Husker fans. But have you had a chance to speak to Garrett McGuire at all? And like when you talk to him, is it do you get like an impression that maybe he knows a little bit more than you would think that you know or expect him to know at his age or?
Rob, I have not talked to him. He hasn't talked to the media yet. But a lot of that comes down to your trust in Rule.
Okay.
Rule.
God, I was hoping you'd say yes and just kind of. We'd be able to use that soundbite.
They haven't had a chance. He hasn't gone in front of the media yet. Like Knighton and Foley had a chance today, and that's probably going to happen here in the next couple weeks. Mitch Sherman was on Hail Varsity Radio a couple weeks ago, and I thought he had an interesting way to talk about the staff at that moment. He was asked by Schmitty, and he goes, what's your take on the staff? And he goes, it's a functional staff. And he goes, I know that doesn't sound sexy. There's nothing sexy about functional, but what's the opposite of that? Dysfunction. And what's kind of been Nebraska really in a nutshell over the course of 20 years, whether it's dysfunction at a AD level or the head coach level or a coordinator or, you know, whatever. I mean, we've just had some level of dysfunction for multiple generations of football now. So that idea that you do hear the same things, the things that Trev talked about when he fired Frost on that Sunday in September, to the things that Rule said when he got hired in December, to the things that Satterfield talked about and White talked about, you know, you just hear this consistency from every level.
I think Bill Bush said something about that on your show this week, Sip. And I want to get back to that too. I'm kind of curious how you set that all up. But Bill Bush talked about the alignment from top to bottom. And I've heard Trev say that. And I've heard Rule say that. And it's kind of their mantra right now. But as a Husker fan that likes to lean towards optimism, I love hearing it. I'm like, I'll grasp on anything, but there does definitely seem from top to bottom, from Carter down to Rule, everybody knows their role. You know, Trev talks about it all the time, you know, if it was the janitor, if it was the training staff, everyone knew their role and they knew how important it was to the absolute success of the program. And that's what it was back in Osborne's day. And like everybody knew, if I didn't do my best job, then I'm actually hurting this program. And the closer we can get to that kind of mindset, that kind of program, I feel like that's just Nebraska football to me. Like in my heart, like in Nebraska football, it's all focused on a singular goal, developing youth, young men to be great players and putting a product on the field that the state can be proud of. And that's really my bottom line. It's not win every game. It's not being national championships every year. It's not even necessarily a conference championship every year, but every time that every time that team goes on that field, I'm not embarrassed by them. I can trust their effort's going to be there and I can trust the execution's going to be there and whatever ends up happening happens. But like, that's what's been missing I don't even want to speculate how long it's been missing, but it's been a while.
Yeah, I can understand where you're coming from. The one thing I'd add is the reason Rule feels comfortable putting his assistants at that podium, like he's done now these last several weeks. We've gotten through almost all of them. The reason he feels comfortable with that is because he's not worried about someone straying from the message.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Rule will have his assistants be available to the media, which I never take it for granted. We've always had that here, but you never know when it's going to get cut off because it's not this. It's not like every place in America makes their assistants available. A lot don't. Mm-hmm. But I know he's not worried about it because he feels very comfortable that their messages are the same. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're kind of talking about, Mac.
Do you foresee your media access being different with this staff?
No, not In fact, no. I've been very. There was a day here recently. I was elated because it sounds like it'll be pretty much the same. We'll get good access.
Same as Frost or same as Riley?
What's that?
Same access as Frost or same access as Riley?
Well, they were pretty similar, Frost and Riley.
Really?
Yeah, they were.
I mean, in terms of practice and everything.
It changed in terms of how much we could view. Riley did let us watch a lot of spring practice. I think I think until the very end. He might have cut it off late.
That's probably
Frost didn't let us watch any. I don't think Rule's going to let us watch practice.
Okay.
But I'm saying in terms of his availability to him and availability to his staff,
gotcha.
There'll be good availability. He said, you can talk to my assistants whenever you want.
Gotcha.
And that's a good sign. That's a great sign. I think that's what Nebraska fans – I think it's important to Nebraska fans that they know these guys. It's not important to all fan bases, but I'd say this fan base, it's important. That was good. And again, to me, it's more about the fact Rule trusts them. And that's beautiful.
Yeah. Assistant coaches are celebrities in this state, unlike other places. One thing I thought of, and I thought of you, Dave, about this today, when Foley got up there before he started, he actually had like a little statement to say. So when I think of Frost at the Big Ten media days where he didn't have a prepared statement, Foley's like, no, I should say something. And he said,
I'm Ed Foley. He said, here's my statement. I'm Ed Foley. I'm the special teams coach.
Hi, Ed.
I should say so. Well, Boomer, let's get one last question in for Sip and then we can get to the parting shots.
Okay, well, let's see. We might have room for two quick ones here if we do. First, Johnny GBR, favorite walk-on, your projected starting O&D line. That's real quick and easy, right?
Oh, dang, Johnny.
Super quick, easy.
Well, luckily, Johnny, I have my depth chart here. I think the center would be – well, I'll just work from left to the right. Teddy Prochazka, I would say – Ethan Piper, left guard. Ben Scott. I think Ben Scott will be the center.
Okay.
Right guard. I'd say Lutovsky. Am I missing somebody here? Right tackle. I don't know what you're doing at right tackle now. I'm not going to put Jacob Hood in the equation. He's basically a freshman. So I'd say Ben Hart's. Am I missing somebody? I must
say Nuuli.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I missed Nuuli. Yeah, I forgot because he's not on my depth chart because he was suspended. So Nuuli's probably your left guard, right? Center, Ben Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what are you doing at right guard? Maybe Piper could make – I don't know. I like Lutovsky a lot. I'm very familiar with Henry. He's the type of guy that I think this line needs. He's got a scary look in his eye. He's not all there. And he, in a good way. I mean, it looks like he would.
Yeah, that is a positive.
Yeah. For sure. And he's mammoth. He's a mammoth human being. I don't know. I guess Ben Hart didn't play that poorly late last year. I mean, he kind of. If you look at his grade, like his Pro Football Focus grades, the last few games were satisfactory. I don't know though. I thought they needed, they needed the kid from Stanford is what they needed. They probably obviously could have used the kid from Baylor, Micah Mazuka. Now I'll tell you something. The area that concerned me as far as transfers go and building your roster, I didn't think they got enough up front. On either side, I think they still got work to do, and I don't know. It's hard to do it. It's hard to go find a tackle like the kid from Stanford. That was that was a body blow. I don't care what anybody says. That people try to mitigate it. Good luck. That was a
Walter Rouse.
I mean, I would be one of those types that try to mitigate that. I honestly would because I've seen how many times I've seen so many transfers come in here. You remember Keen Green? How dominant that
well,
is.
Well, he was never dominant.
He came in. No, Keen Green wasn't. He was a transfer.
No, Keen Green was a high school kid, but from South Carolina. Yeah. But regardless, it's your point.
I'm still not sure about that. But I don't know how many times I've been told this guy's going to play and step in right away and do fine.
The difference is Walter Rouse
for the Pac-12.
Three-year starter. I mean, at
Pac-12. Olshon Mathis was an All-American or All-Big 12, and he was – I know people say he had a better season than I think he had. But I watched the games too, and I wasn't overly impressed. If that guy was coming to the Big Ten to make a name for himself and raise his draft position, he certainly didn't. I guess it goes back to if these guys are better at developing players, you can't tell me that we haven't recruited to a level like Ben Hart's a top 100.
Corcoran's
Corcoran's a top 100.
Yeah, I love Corcoran.
Prochazka's a top 100 guy.
Yeah.
Show me then. If you guys are developers, if we kept Raiola for a reason, develop them. And let's see where they go. I'm not putting that on them, but I'm not ruling it out, I guess is what I'm saying.
No, I think that's
if
fair.
If they get that's better, fair. Then that's actually, to me, a really good sign of what coaches we kept and what this coaching staff can do. Exact same thing with Xavier Betts. How do we get this guy back? He's an NFL talent, period. His physical ability is day one draft talent. I mean, he legitimately, if his head was out of the game, that guy scored touchdowns and he shouldn't have, right? If we're good at developing players at this point, then we should have players on the team that we can develop. But and Rule said before we got any transfers, I'm not buying into the narrative that we don't have a good offensive line. He said that before fair. Rouse ever came and went. Yeah. No, so I mean, we'll see. It's hard for me to get up and down about a player that never even played a snap. But I understand what you're saying, and I understand people's view on that whole thing.
Yeah.
How about the D-line? You had some.
I mean, it's hard. It's really hard to project the edge without seeing those guys. I haven't seen MJ Sherman play an appreciable amount. Chief Borders hasn't played. I mean, it's just hard to judge his
special. It's good having Butler come back from the
Butler and Gunnarsson are. Yeah, Butler. They absolutely needed Jamari Butler. But man, those guys were lightly used. I feel a little better about Butler than Gunnarsson. They're both. I think they both have a lot of potential, though. Mm-hmm. Ty Robinson, of course, is almost guaranteed to start. You wonder about Stephon when he's back, and he was sufficient. Nash is in that discussion. Hutmacher, there's a guy, Roquan Buckley, that has so far is still here.
Did he move to tight end though, or was he?
Really?
No. Okay, I thought I had saw that he had moved around.
No way. No, there's no way he's a tight end. I mean, he's a big, thick kid. He can't play tight end.
Okay.
So those are your guys. Those are the principals. But I thought they needed to go in the portal and get one or two, and they did.
Now Elijah Judy from A&M, is he?
Judy will have a shot.
And I guess that maybe the kind of put a topper on the offseason, the development question is. Those transfers that we have, are they all here right now? Are they going through all the mat drills and everything? Or do you know of anybody that's not going to get here until May? Because that to me seems to be the biggest thing. If we can get kids, if we can get transfers in January, they tend to be more successful than, to your point, even about O'Shawn or some of those guys, when we get them here in June and July, that's asking a lot for anybody to come in here. And
as far as I know, all those guys are here. I mean, the one way to look is if you want, you guys are very diligent. Is go to the 1890 Initiative Twitter account. They don't tweet out that this guy has joined us if that guy isn't on campus and competing. And as far as I mean, the key ones are definitely here. Ben Scott, I know, is here. Billy Kemp is here. Fleeks is here. Sims is here. Judy's here. Borders here. Sherman's here. So, in that tight end, I think it's here. So, yeah, I think the key ones are here.
I'm curious, Sip, like, on the D-line, too, because you've had Bush, obviously, and I'm sure that you guys, much like we do, like, talk off camera or off mic a lot. How many of these guys that are coming back that you said weren't being used a lot, were on the roster, how many of those guys, like, have you spoken with Bill about some of those guys? Like, hey, what, can you give me kind of an evaluation of what you see in some of these guys coming back this year?
Yeah, I mean, there's not that many examples of that. I mean, I guess you'd be talking maybe about a guy like
You said like Butler and the other
Butler.
Guy. Yeah.
Butler. Oh, Jamari.
Yeah,
he was fine. There was a drop off though. There was always they were concerned when they would take Garrett out or O'Shawn out or Caleb out. There was a drop off. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Bill would tell you that. Pretty sizable drop off. Those guys got to make up a lot of ground. I know Mac's not a big fan of O'Shawn, but O'Shawn was a second team All Big 12. Garrett was a second team All Big 10. Caleb Tanner never missed a game. Those guys were. I mean, they played. I mean, they were. Mm-hmm. good players. O'Shawn was okay and then came on late. He didn't have the kind of year he did at TCU. He had good years at TCU. He didn't have that, but he was.
But he left TCU and they went to the national championship game. You would think if you took your
time. I haven't noticed that, Matt.
I am curious your thoughts because I see both the points with a guy like O'Shawn, because I've tried to make this point with the offseason thing. If O'Shawn had gotten here in January, do you think his season is different as opposed to getting here in June or July?
No, not really. You saw it. You guys watched it. It was a different world here. His Big Ten's a different world than the Big 12. I watched all his Big 12 tape. It's pretty striking that you don't see the tackles in the Big 12 you don't see the quality of tackles in the Big 12 that you do in the Big 10. He just went up a notch, and he wasn't as productive. To me, it was that. Got was pushed up good field a lot. But his motor was good. I mean, he's a good tackler for mm-hmm. that. Doesn't miss tackles. Hammers guys. I thought he was okay. But I just think the step up to the Big Ten is what got him. He got swallowed up too often.
Wouldn't you think it's probably a step up from the Pac-12 as well, though?
It's a good point. Yeah, it is. It is. Although Rouse, I've heard Rouse was a – now, what I've heard is Rouse could be a first or second rounder. If now he's got an injury issue, he's got a labrum issue, and that's a big issue.
That's a big issue.
Yeah. So he wasn't going to come now to you now to support what you're saying, Mac. He wasn't going to be involved in spring ball, so it would have been he would have had to come on fast. And if he's got a bad labrum, if it lingers, that's a bad injury for a long lineman.
Right. And I'm not trying to be negative, and I'm certainly not trying to dump on O'Shawn at all. And I'm not. It's just the tendency of Husker fans and
fans,
everything,
like some
to get geared up about, like you said earlier, about the next big thing. I'm like, well, okay. And when we lose somebody, it's like, I don't know. I just don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I was curious, you know, you had a fantastic day. You had Bill Bush on all week, and that guy is a class act, top to bottom. I loved listening to him all week long. Mm-hmm. Was having him on for a week and talking to him, and I'm sure there was, you know, when you went to break, you had conversations, and I'm sure you talked to him.
Yeah, he doesn't talk a lot like that, but yeah, go ahead.
But did the conversations with him and just having him around, did that change any of your opinion about what kind of turnaround or what kind of season we can have next year, or is not mm-hmm. much?
Oh, we talk a lot, so mm-hmm. nothing he said on the show really impacted it. We talked during the season a lot. A lot of off the record stuff. So nothing he has said in the last couple of weeks has changed what I thought. Okay. He likes those guys. They played hard for him. I told that story, not story, but he shared that vignette about, which was really impactful to me. Now he hadn't told me this when he told it on the air. That was the first time I'd heard it, that the Iowa walkthrough, when he put his defense through the walkthrough the morning of the Iowa game in the team hotel, he said it was a national championship level walkthrough, that those guys were so dialed in. And that's where I really push back on this. You know, you'll hear a lot of media say, the program was in shambles, mm-hmm. train wreck. That doesn't suggest that the program was in shambles. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. they had a national championship walkthrough before the last game and beat the Big Ten West leader on their home field. I mean, I know what ensues in that conversation is, yeah, Frost was 16-31 or whatever the hell he was. Yeah, it's true. And record's the record. But no, Bill thinks they have a good, he thinks those kids are good kids, uh-huh. tough kids. They're returning. A lot of those guys, come on, man. I mean, a lot of these guys come back are good players.
I agree.
There are some deficiencies up front I worry about. Both inside linebackers are injury prone. They got to get depth behind Reimer and Henrich. Mm-hmm. They got their edges. You know, you wonder about the edge a little bit. Those guys, they lost three good players there. Man, they're good in the secondary, though.
That was a great exchange because I listened to that one, too. And I appreciated that you kind of pushed him on. What does that even mean? What's a great walkthrough even look like? Because to me, it's the same thing as, like, you know, we had a great game plan. I'm like, what's a game plan? I mean, what is really a game plan? Tell me what that means. I don't know.
You did have a good answer. You did have a good answer.
Yeah, that was a great exchange. That was this last week when you had him. That was a fantastic week of early break.
Yeah, Pacific. I think we're going to keep having him on. I mean, what happened was Bill, we've always talked about doing a show. And, you know, his wife, I think he wants to stay around here. He doesn't, you know, he coached at LSU and his wife lived here. And I don't think they wanted to do that anymore. So now I think he'll stick around here.
God, I wish he would.
Not to coach, but to be on the radio. So I don't know. I don't know for sure how it's going to work. I don't want to speak out of turn. We're just kind of doing it. I don't know. There's different options here, but me and Bill had talked for a few years about doing shows. So that's what we're doing.
That's awesome. It was a great week.
Are those Bill Bush's reading glasses you have on? I love that story.
That's hilarious.
No,
the 52, you know what? 52 you know what pairs are, of glasses.
Though? I don't know if you see those little trinkets on there.
They are like they're bedazzled.
Yeah,
they did crack me up when you said you stirred your coffee with your glasses.
I could put these on.
I got pink ones. There's the pink ones. I was saying, you said I have pink ones, turquoise ones.
How about this? Would this look good? There's a listener that he gave us gifts. Toothless Dave, he brought in Patron for me, and he's heard me talk about how I lose my glasses. I was down to one, so he gave me a bag of readers, some of which are effective and not pink. Toothless Dave brought some pretty elaborate gifts in.
Well, so
which one of you has had the same pair of readers for like 20 years, or was that you, or is that Bill, like, that has the same pair?
I mean, I have. It wasn't Bill, because Bill's got like literally 200 readers. And I see what happened. He has 200, and I was literally down to one pair. Anybody who wears readers understand that you lose them a lot. You know, Bill keeps them. He has like several in his truck, several in each room. I usually would do that, but I just lose them. I just tend to lose them or break them or whatever. And I was literally down to one pair. But I made it work for several weeks. I mean, I kept the pair for several, which it's been amazing. I said, I'm going to treat these like they're real glasses, not real. Right. So then Toothless heard it. And I got a bag of them, which is good.
Well, Sip, really appreciate you taking time here this week. Just want to give a prep to a couple of our upcoming shows next week, Monday, February 6th at 8 p.m. We have Tyler Kai, the associate AD of Leadership Gifts Capital Projects. He'll be on the next night, Tuesday, February 7th at 8 p.m. We welcome Troy Dumas, all-conference linebacker, national champ from 94 and Husker fan, to the fan forum. And the following Wednesday, February 15th at 8 p.m., we'll have Adam McClintock, a co-founder of Matrix Analytical, the college football professor.
One of my favorite John Wayne movies.
He will be on as well. So a very good crew of upcoming shows coming. And then also, if you like this, ring the bell for the RedCast. Click subscribe, ring it, all that good stuff. You know, we want to get as many people following, subscribing. We really appreciate it. And thank you to everyone that's been following. Dave, I think it's time for a little bit of parting shots.
All right. Are we going to save Sip for last? Is that right?
Yeah, Sip gets the last one.
All right. Let's start off hot with RedCast Rob.
Well, I guess mine isn't so much as like a, I guess parting shot. But, you know, Sip, I have to tell you how much, you know, I appreciate you and your relationship here with the RedCast. You know, and, you know, when I saw you out in New Jersey, you know, mm-hmm. you treated me like I belong there. You were super nice about everything, answered all my questions that I had while I was, you know, kind of trying to fumble my way through the press box.
You were doing just fine. Down the field. You were doing just fine.
And I appreciate that, you know, and then, you know, after the game, you and I sat and talked for a little while afterwards. And, you know, it's, you have provided an element of legitimacy to the RedCast on your own, just by being here. And you have actually helped me in a lot of ways and given me some words of advice that I absolutely appreciate. And so I just want to thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome, and it was nice seeing you out there, and I really appreciate being on with you guys.
And God knows Rob needs all the help he can get, Seb.
You just had to do it, didn't you, Dave? Hopefully we'll see you in Minnesota. Honky and I will, and then we'll also, you know, the next week you're in my backyard. So
yeah, Dave.
Yeah, you better Rob be
out there. Yeah, yeah, I was gonna say absolutely. if you come out here, man, I would love to. You know, I know Dave and I would love to. You know, treat you to some Colorado local. You know, fanfare and
fanfare. That sounds good. Good euphemism there, Rob. Yeah.
That's right. All right, Boomer, what do you got for us?
Just a couple of quick things. First off, a subject we'll probably touch on more in the off season. There was a good article today about the NCAA and NIL, how they're going to be looking a little more deeply using circumstantial evidence to kind of go after programs and things like that. So I just want to give an early warning to programs like Stetson and Binghamton. The NCAA is going to be really look to crack down on somebody. So it's like the bean guys for your $100, you know, NIL deals and whatever you got. And then my second quick take, you know, everyone knows pro wrestling and Australian rules football are two of the big passions of the Redcast. But our third other side venture is fencing. I did have a fun weekend at the local Lincoln Fencing Club, had their icicle invitational. A lot of good fencers out, and I spent some time talking to the University of Iowa Fencing Club. And, you know, despite them being Hawkeyes, they're a pretty good bunch, and they did pretty well for themselves. And it was fun to learn that the University of Wisconsin Fencing Club are full of a bunch of whiny jerks. So,
yeah. You think with all that cheese out there, they'd be good.
According to Iowa. That's great. Mac.
I want to echo what Rob said, and I want to thank Sip for entertaining Rob out there. He can be difficult, and you know, we all kind of smile and nod when he says things he thinks are funny and they're not, but you know, and for you not to tear him down publicly, I do truly appreciate. And beyond that, I mean, you're a Columbus guy, and you're right around our age. I really appreciate in this age of youth being driving the market as somebody who's not. The thing I like the most about you, Sip, is you never say anything with absolute certainty, like you know when you don't. No, but yeah. I mean, I say that with real respect. Uh-huh. You don't pretend to know when you don't know. Right. And I feel like that's a thing that happens a lot with the media. And I've always, Honk and I've talked about this all the time. Sip always leaves a little hedge room. He always gives himself a little wiggle room. And that's why we've always enjoyed you. That's why when we started this, you were a priority to get on here.
Well,
because we both respected your opinion so much. Being from Columbus is a bonus, but I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah, the Columbus thing is big to me. I mean, it is. You guys are from my hometown, and that's important to me.
If they are mostly SCOTUS guys, Sip, you know.
That's fine. I'm Catholic. My mom fought hard for us to go to SCOTUS. My dad vetoed it.
smart man, Mr. Sipple.
There you go.
I'm a high guy too. Redcast Honky, what do you got, man?
Well, this is an all-time first. Normally when I do tweets of the week, it's in reference to one that we've already sent out. This is actually a preview of what will be going out in about 2.5 hours. Happy birthday wishes. January 31st will go out to Coach Rule. So Redcast Nation, everyone out there, you know, send your birthday wishes to the new coach. He will be 48, I believe, years young tomorrow.
So young. Still younger than me.
Yeah, it's my wife's birthday as well tomorrow, so I should probably remember to do something for her as well. But there's a good chance Coach Rule might get flowers before she does, but that's more my problem.
Yeah. We love you, Kathy.
So, anyways, happy birthday, Kathy and Coach Rule.
I'm waking up at 5 a.m. to text her before you even say it to her, Honky. That's all I know.
There we go.
All right, Sip, you have the honors. Get us out of here.
Okay, well, I always forget Turner Corcoran, so I'm going to use this to – you know, when I said my offensive line, I always forget him for some reason. I don't know exactly where he's going to play, but you could shift him over to right tackle, certainly, which is maybe that's probably what I should have said. But also, thank you guys. We did this for an hour and a half, and I would say it goes very fast. I like listening to you guys. I don't go on every podcast that asks. So, I like coming on with you guys. It's fun. We'll do it again. Okay.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, guys. That was a lot of fun. That was a blast of a show. Hopefully we'll have Sip on again. Definitely before maybe next season. So for now, we got a bunch of great shows coming up in the next few weeks. We'll look forward to that. And let's call that a Go Big Redcast.
Take care, Red.
Heard at Sports Network production.